Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredible, vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. We don't actually run the tropical house music when we're doing it, but that's imagining it. Like boop boop deep boop doop boop boop.
So yeah, that's the intro in your head as you're
it's the intro in my head. So yeah, I'm myself pumped up to be on this episode. So there it is. Hi everybody. Was that how good it was? Let me know in your emails and comments how great my interpretation of our Tropical House Beats theme song is.
It's so funny. Now, like 34, 35 episodes in, we have stopped throwing shade at our own Tropical House Beats. We've stopped looking for a replacement. It's just part of the look and feel of the show now.
It's kind of like, I think there was like a, when I was growing up in my house, there was like a certain piece of furniture that none of us liked, I think. And somebody would ask, well, why is it there? And I think it's like, it's been there so long, man. Like, why move it? You know,
it's just the way it is.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Real talk. Now I'll name something. Are you familiar with like Sony televisions that had the massive Trinitron tubes?
Oh yeah.
Like, this was not just like a TV. Yeah. It was like a fixture, right? It was like, you know, maybe a 30-inch diagonal, but it was like, it dominated the room. Right. And it's like encased in wood. We had one of those growing up. Right. But when it breaks or when it's done, we never moved it. We just built around it.
It was just like a credenza in the living room.
It was a credenza in our dining, you know, in our family room. And people would ask, like, well, does that TV work? No, actually, we watched the TV in front of it. They would ask us, why didn't you move it? Man, that thing's heavy.
It's too hard.
I don't want to move it. I ain't doing it. Well, I'm like, I'm like 13, so I'm not moving it. And then I looked at my dad taking a nap on the guy. He's like, that guy ain't moving it. So so there you go. That's the Tropical House Beats. It's that outdated Trinitron.
That's tube. Right. That's right. Although if you have a submission for a new intro pod music, please don't hesitate to reach out to us at pod@imaginemke.org.
We'll take it. We'll consider it.
This is a fight that Lindsay has stopped fighting, where it's just sort of been beaten out of her, where she's just like,
that's, you know, why what? She started her own podcast.
That's
so
right.
She could wash the taste of that song off the brand through her Krista Tippett chill vibes.
That's so funny.
She'd rather have her sound like the Nora Jones compilation at Starbucks. I get it. But
next time you find like some poison candy at your desk, you'll know that when you called out her aesthetic as Nora Jones from Starbucks,
which is a very 2002 reference. So yeah, I'm 45 years old, man. What are you gonna do? All right, hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Imagine This Podcast. I know the previous 3 minutes is why y'all tune in. Not for us discovering the joyful abundance that's present in arts and culture here in Milwaukee. Later up on the pod, we've got special guest champion of the network, Christine Fleming from the Haggerty Museum. She'll be up with us in a bit. But in the meantime, we always got to check in, right, David? And so we checked in, we talked about our theme. But that's the past, David. What are we looking forward to? What are we excited about looking forward to something?
Yeah, so we've got some fun things coming up. So first, let's not bury the lead and actually talk about how exciting it's been over the last week or so because of all of you guys reaching out to your elected officials. Mac, I think, is looking up the actual numbers, but literally hundreds and hundreds of people, many of you have reached out to your elected officials and have generated thousands of messages in the last 2 weeks or so, thanking our governor and lieutenant governor for the establishment of this $5 million arts and culture grant, but also reminding them that $5 million is not enough. You know, I think if you've been following our social media, we've compared ourselves to Oregon, right? Which has a population less than the state of Wisconsin. And yet through their CARES funding, they've been able to establish a state arts and culture grant at $50 million, whereas we've only chosen to do five. And it's not like Oregon is not dealing with important issues like housing or food or other COVID-19 response or even wildfires. But they were able to invest $50 million in their arts and culture world.
David Lee walking the fine line of thanks so much, y'all. And by the way, it's not enough. It's a fine rhetorical line you're walking there. David asking me for the numbers. Guys, in the last 2 weeks, y'all, in the last 2 weeks, we've generated, our network has generated 2,270 correspondences to our elected officials at the state and federal level.
That's incredible. That is so incredible.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And that somewhere on Earth 3, where there's no Imagine MKE, those elected officials aren't sweating, right? They don't have a tally sheet somewhere that said lots of tallies next to, man, these people are salty about the arts not getting funded.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you, Imagine Nation. I just made that up.
Hashtag you did imagine. It.
Look at
you
this. Look what I did.
Did it. Imagination. Oh my God.
Look what I did. Thank you, Imagine Nation.
Oh my God.
Underscore Nation. Blown. Is it Imagine capital N Nation? You know, Lindsay's listening to this and shaking her head going, you guys really aren't that great. You're really not as awesome as you guys think you are. That's what Lindsay's doing right now. She's just shaking her head. It's like, shut up.
I don't even know if she listens.
She doesn't listen to the pod anymore.
I think she's lost the fight on this one.
but yeah, back to it.
But here's the thing, right? Like you all reaching out to your elected officials and telling them what's important to you. This is part of our democracy, right? Your elected officials represent you. They work for you. And I think this is the transition to this other cool thing that's coming up. Over the next few weeks, we will be hosting a series of events on the road of democracy, right? Between now and Election Day, we will be doing a number of a series of panels that sort of explicate or sort of explore the intersections of art, civic engagement, democracy, and this road of democracy that we're all on. As part of that, I think we will be actually taking a little bit of a break from our podcast and just giving our air to the rebroadcasts of these events. So expect...
David, are calling it a simulcast? It's simulcast.
I don't know if it's actually a simulcast, is it? like WrestleMania 2 style, like in three different places?
Yeah. By the way, the best WrestleMania was WrestleMania 3. Chicago, LA, New York. That was
three? No, that was two.
That was three. No, that's three. Wasn't that three? That was the one with British Bulldogs, Dynamite Kid, and David.
At the Rosemont Horizon.
They beat British Beefcake and the Heart Foundation. No, yeah. British Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine. So that was the Heart Foundation, right? They beat the Heart Foundation in that one.
Oh,
right?
Man.
That was a good one. That was a good match.
It was at the Rosemont Horizon.
Yeah, as a Rosemont Horizon. Was that also the one where Big John Studd got slammed? Was that the one where he did slam Big John Studd? That was
it might be.
Can you hear all our arts audiences just turning off the pod?
Look, professional wrestling is a performing art.
It is.
At us. We will defend that one.
Come at us.
Yeah.
Come at us, hashtag Imagine Nation. Come at us. So anyway, we're gonna create some space for those panels to be aired, you know, on the pod, because I think it's a really great conversations and we're excited about. We can't announce the guests yet.
Yeah.
Because we're still working with our agents and appearance fees. It's super messy. You know, you get the deal, but we're going to have a cavalcade.
It's going to be a really, if we get to 50% of 75% of what we have imagined, it's going to be incredible.
David, but it's all said and done. That's going to be the statue of an Imagine MKE. It's going to be a picture of you in a tan suit standing in front of Pfizer Forum. And it says, if we get to 50% of 75% of whatever you imagine, it's going to be freaking cool. I believe that is the charge right there on your legacy. I'm already fast forwarding to 30 years from now when you leave this role.
When I shovel off this mortal coil on my headstone, right? Hashtag tan suit debacle. and he got 50% of 75% of what he imagined.
And you're awful at math, so you don't even know how much that really is. I can't even tell you what.
Is it like a third or something?
37.5%, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's 37. If we get 37.5%, no, but it's better if you say 50% of 75% we had hoped for.
Right. Right.
So that's coming up. That's coming up for the next several weeks in the run-up. Also, we're also supporting public art at that time. Am I correct?
That's right.
Is it fair to say that?
Yeah, no. Well, we're going to be supporting a commission of four new pieces that will be exploring this question about arts, democracy, and inclusion, and voting, and civic engagement. So it's going to be an exciting few weeks in the early October timeframe.
So look for that. So we're excited to be involved in so many dimensions of the arts, the intersection of arts and culture and democracy here in Milwaukee. So
just such an important topic, particularly in this year of the Lord. I don't know how that, I don't know where that came from. I have no idea.
In the year of our Lord?
You got me thinking about dying, which, you know, quite frankly, is not like a, which does not take a lot with
you. Yeah, right. Like, you don't have to go there. But I mean, it doesn't take a lot for you to go there. Listeners, I want you to know that David has shared publicly that he has a playlist of songs he once played at his wake.
It's a good playlist. We'll link to it in the show notes.
As a result, we created on Spotify, which Death Songs for David Lee or something like that. It's something like that on Spotify. So it's a public list. We'll share it on the ephemera. So yeah, it doesn't take a lot for David to get to death. So there, just want to summarize again. 2,716 pieces of correspondence to our electeds by you, Imagine Nation, in service to making sure thanking them for standing up for the arts, but continuing, we need more support for our arts and cultural organizations. So let's keep it going. Let's double that number in the next couple of weeks, everybody. Because who knows, right? They need to spend down this money right away, and some areas might not spend it down. So let's show them that. So thanks for those that listened to last week, as well as been staying tuned. And then stay tuned for more conversation about arts in the intersection with democracy, with our Road to Democracy series. So so that's what's happening. And excited to see what's happening on the rest of this podcast is we're going to have our guest. We're so excited to have her on because, David, when we even started this thing, when this podcast was a twinkling in our eye over Thai food, I believe, in Madison, many years ago. We didn't know her then, but we knew we needed to have Kristen on this podcast because she's been very much involved in our work here at Imagine MKE as a network leader, participating in our neighborhood partnerships work group, as well as she was a key organizer in organizing our neighborhoods work for the DNC art activation, which is—
That was incredible. That was an incredible art activation.
It's Earth One. It was Earth One. But she did a lot of work. I mean, she helped to survey darn near hundreds of people to like figure out what's happening in the neighborhood. So either way, let's not take away shine from Christine Fleming, who is our guest. She's held the position of manager of community engagement at the Hagerty Museum of Art since February of 2019. In this role, she has created and managed K-12 educational programs in conjunction with the permanent collection and rotating exhibitions, as well as facilitated community partnership programs. Prior, she served as a museum educator for school programs at the Dayton Art Institute, WSUP, Ohio. And also was the education program coordinator at the Columbia River Maritime Museum. I love that there's like a circuit of museums. Like, you start at the Columbia River Maritime, and it's like my buddies that worked in journalism, and they're like, yeah, I'm working here at the Anchorage Yell. it's a 100,000 circ paper, but I'm going to hopefully get to the St. Louis Register. So there you go. Museums have it. She earned her BFA from the University of Minnesota Duluth. And she's also spent years teaching art in the Minneapolis area. So she's a relative newcomer. And she also studied overseas in England, doing art history, getting her MA in Nottingham, England. So we're really excited. We know her as not just one of the biggest Downton Abbey fans I know, but the lovely, effervescent, and delightful Christine Fleming. Christine, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for joining us via Zoom.
My favorite.
Every meeting is conducted by
everyone's new office.
This is a podcast. Yeah, this is a podcast.
We're going to see how long it takes for Mac to refer to this as a webinar.
Yeah. Or conference
call. It's a different price point on Zoom. So you gotta be
correct. That is correct.
That is correct. Well, Christine Fleming, it's so great to have you friend of the network, champion of the network, if you will. And I think when we started this podcast, David and I was like, oh, we gotta have Christine on. And so 33 episodes later, that's a reflection of us.
And a little bit of podcast lore. You were supposed to be our first guest back in like February and then, or January, whenever we mentioned this idea to you. And then time passed and now 33 episodes in, finally you're on.
I view myself as a supporter of good ideas. So I was silently cheering you guys on, spreading the word about the pod. I didn't need to be the first guest. I'm honored to be whatever number you guys would invite me to be.
We wanted to just get good at this. And then so by the time
I see,
you came,
I see.
We were ready. We were ready for your brilliance. And I'd like to think honestly, I don't think we'll ever be ready. So we just had to commit to have you here. So, Christine, thanks so much for coming on the pod today. I think what compels us to connect with you is not just your role, right, at the Hagerty Museum at Marquette University, but also just even how you hold your role, right, as you are a weaver of networks. You had been a big champion early on of getting us trying to engage all the zip codes in the Democratic National Convention art activation that on Earth One happened. But not yes. On this earth happened. So ever since then, and again, I think the element is that you're such a champion for making sure everyone gets to engage. And so I want to start with engagement. What was your earliest memory of your own formative art? What was a formative art experience for you, and how does it resonate with you today?
So this is such a hard question, and in part, it is a hard question because I was very privileged. My grandma, who was from England, moved over here. She was an art teacher. She was getting her master's in art history. So like earliest formative memory is playing I Spy with her. And the idea that like in viewing the world and paying attention and having a critical eye, I think informed everything else. But then because of her role in our family, and she passed away when I was quite young, I grew up going to the symphony, the children's theater, opera, ballet. I mean, it was just such an integral part of the way our family experienced life together that it's hard to like pinpoint. I do know my first like museum love, art love was MIA. If you're old school, the Minneapolis Institute of Art, I grew up going to MIA. My family drove me into the city for classes. I mean, I go there every time I'm back in Minneapolis. It was like where my love of all things visual art formed. But for kind of arts and culture at large, it's so hard to pinpoint. So I just give her credit because she started it all.
That's a great place to start. I appreciate you kind of talking about these other formative experiences, and I want to build off of that. What did you think you're going to be when you're growing up? Because I don't know if your current role was one of those that like you know about, right? Like it's almost like hidden.
I am like anomaly child. So middle school, I had a horribly mean art teacher. And because I'd had all these experiences, I was pretty confident in my art making skills and like what it was to be an artist. And I had one of those teachers, I'm sure many people have, where they would draw on top of your artwork to correct it. I'm using air quotes for the podcast.
I've never experienced that ever.
I was outraged and in like sixth grade said, I'm going to become an art teacher and I'm never going to do that. So like my career path was always, I'm going to teach art, which I did in Minneapolis and Minnesota for about 5 or 6 years, and then recession. So then the backup plan was always I'll teach for 20 years and then move into art museums. So my timeline just shifted, but like from middle school, I knew I'm going to be an art teacher. I'm going to work in an art museum. That's the goal.
It reminds me of the movie Dead Poets Society, where the first English teacher was like, we're going to draw a chart and it's going to be, you know, the X-axis is this and the Y-axis is this. And you didn't have the Robin Williams teacher. You had that teacher of art. You
know. Well, and I have to give credit because I had that one mean art teacher and my parents were like, well, yeah, that's not okay. And then every art teacher I had after that was phenomenal. So I had both the like when it's going poorly example and then the amazing, you're killing it way to just support arts and, you know, child development and all that examples after. So,
but that again, building up that first answer though, because you had such a rich home life, you could kind of compare it to like this person's anomaly.
Yeah.
Right? Again, I don't know how many of your classmates had that, right? Like they might have been, that's how it goes, right? Which who knows? Because that's just a bummer to be corrected and having that red pencil mentality all over your stuff and when you're trying to create. But
yeah, that's interesting to see the perspective of everyone else. There are only one or two art teachers from our graduating class, and maybe I should reach out to them and say, hey, do you remember that Meet Art Teacher? Is that why you're also art ed?
You know, it's funny, like, I don't know if you know this, but there's a stereotype out there about how Asians are really good at math. And I'm
like how you prefaced it. I like you're like, hey, I want to make sure. I don't know if our listeners are aware.
But there's a stereotype out there. But I'm really bad at it. And in sort of like you, like I'm a bit of an anomaly in that way, right? Like whereas my verbal skills are sort of a little off the charts, my math skills are really low. And when I came back with my SAT scores, my parents basically looked at it and they're like, I don't think you're our child or Asian. But I wonder, I had a really mean math teacher. And I wonder if that was that math teacher sort of like beat out the stereotype out of me. I don't know if I should be thankful or not.
I mean, teachers are powerful. there's good or evil.
You know, a bit of a digression. But when I think about being that age, or I even think of my kids when they come to me, they're in seventh and ninth grade. It's like, oh man, the teacher's mean or something. I you know, you always got to dig a little bit. And sometimes there's mean for what you're talking about, right? Which is almost just sort of like creating conformity, right? And like
single way. Doing
right,
things.
Right.
As narrow, yeah.
And I think sometimes maybe there's like stern in the sense of like they have such a high standard, and because you're young, you're not used to meeting someone who has that high standard, you know, in a way, and it comes off as mean. But rather, what it is that they're setting a table. And I recognize none of your examples are dabbling into that. But I also, when I think about that age, I remember my basketball coach was also my bio teacher. I know this is the total podcast, right? Let's talk about it. Right. But he was an incredibly demanding person on the court. And even though I was the 19th guy and an 18th person seventh grade basketball teacher, he was relentless on me like I was a starter. And at the time I thought it was mean, and it only took me a little while to go like, oh, he cares about me. Like, so I'm not sticking up for your art teacher. I'm just trying to delineate. That person wasn't that, obviously, but I'm just noting, like, it's interesting about mean. The context.
It is
I think yours is really mean. Like yours
internalized.
Is really,
well, it just is not, you know, I think I was the only one in my family kind of in air quotes again dubbed with the creative gene, right? I got it from grandma. I was the only one.
You're the chosen one.
But because of that, none of them gave me preconceived notions on what it means to be an artist, right? Mm-hmm. There's like lots of ways to be creative, to express yourself. And I think it's more that. I superimpose mean with just limited, right? There's so many ways. I'm a different type of artist than you are, art teacher who wants to, you know, make me do it your way. That's not the point of art. So I think that was my young me was rebelling against that there's so many ways to be.
You had talked about an arc right there in the last answer, this notion of like, I'm going to teach education in the schools about art, and then I'm going to jump to the museums, right? And now it was just accelerated. Right, you spent fewer years in arts education, and then jumped. What is it about jumping to the museum? Tell me about that. Like, what was it about that you already knew ahead of time? You know that.
I would never have thought.
I've gone to museums growing up a lot. Right, I went to a great public school. It never would have dawned on me like, oh, I could work there. Like, it never dawned on me. Right. So, what was it for you that like you could attain that, or you could visualize that?
I mean, I think it started from Mia and going there to take classes. So I lovingly refer, excuse me, I lovingly refer to museum education as the dark side, and going to the dark side, which I'm not like, I don't even know if that's Star Wars or Star Trek. But, so sorry fans of those. I call it that in part because there's a certain kind of, there's an environmental difference, right? Museums are informal, but you don't have a set classrooms of students. There's not the same teacher-student relationship, but you're in front of the actual artworks, right? The like soul of these artists and these different movements, and they're all together in these rooms, and that is so interesting and dynamic. And so I feel a little guilty that I prefer to be with like my art friends in the museum instead of just in a classroom using slides, where there's the part where encouraging students and them to explore their own creativity and, you know, create identities for themselves. And then there's the part where you can learn from other artists and explore this huge range of what it is to be an artist, what is art. Mm-hmm. So I think they're so different, but for me, the arc was always, you can't do just one or the other, right? Mm-hmm. They're both super important. So be in a classroom, but I always had, you know, relationships with museum. I worked at museums part-time. I would bring field trips there, that kind of like they integrated. But the goal at the end, I mean, my ultimate goal, my retirement plan is to do some obscure research topic for a PhD and just travel the world to different museums where I have to travel to do my research. That sounds horrible.
I think it's interesting that you noted that dark side was this notion of, from a perspective of someone who's working in classrooms, to work in a museum is almost like, oh, I see how it is. Okay. Like that vibe. Is that,
I sold out a little bit.
That's the framework. That's the framework.
Right? Exactly. I was meant to earn my place in the museum after, going through in the trenches in the classroom for 20 years. So that kind of vision of, I feel like I cheated a little now.
I don't want to pick on, I'm not picking on you. I just want to make sure I understand the nuance because it resonates with me as somebody who worked in youth development, I worked in dating violence prevention, gang violence prevention, doing the after school stuff. And then whenever I had a peer that would go to work in philanthropy, it was always like, I ain't gonna, and again, I'd have this mindset of like, I ain't ever gonna sell out. But then again, that's a very binary mindset. As I've gotten older, I noticed there's different roles, and obviously, there's a place and a need to have people that are grounded in those institutions that have a real sense of what's happening, in the margins, on the fringes, in the quote unquote trenches. But I always looked at it as one another. So that's why it resonated with me. I spent the last 5 years trying to unlearn all my hatred of philanthropy and steadily learning it back, actually, in the pandemic. But that's another podcast. That's another podcast.
That's a different show. That's right.
That's a different show.
Exactly. I mean, I have a current teaching license. So this is my way around the dark side. If ever there is, a need, I can always jump back in. And I think it's important to kind of keep a foot in each of those worlds. But yeah, I do have a little museum guilt.
But so I think what's interesting, right, about your role right now and sort of this train of conversation, right, is that you're at the Hagerty Museum of Art at Marquette University, which, is a museum on the campus of an incredible learning institution. And so, one of the things that I think has been so interesting to me in coming to this role is just the amount of art galleries and museums in Milwaukee. Like, for a city of our size, you just wouldn't expect it. And so I guess, can you talk a little bit about the utility of having a museum at Marquette? How did that happen? Right. And with, especially in a city of our size.
It's such a great story of kind of what happens with a lot of, I think, arts organizations or organizations, universities. They were gifted a lot of artworks. So you amass artworks until, we really need to do something with all of these artworks. So there was a great group of folks, and there's more information on our website, which I won't off the top of my head be able to have memorized everything, but they worked together to create the museum. What's really unique and what I love about the art museum in relationship with Marquette is Marquette has no fine art department or art history department. Which I love, because our team, and especially the curator of academic engagement, Lynn Schumo, does an amazing job making art fit, making art relevant to explore any subject, right? Like, art is at the heart of all human experience. So biology classes, nursing classes, all of these topics that you can explore through art, through themes in art, through the personal lives of the artists. So that feels like such a unique place that, especially this year, the museum space is literally a classroom, just to help out with, the physical distancing on campus. Students are going in and taking Spanish classes and biology inside the museum, which is so unique, I think, for both an academic museum, but museums as a whole. So that's exciting for me, that we can really stretch and connect with all different subjects.
Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing you say is this notion of, like, it's possible that in another
way. Like, again, there's other places like, do they have museums on their campuses, as you said, in a learning institution? If they had an arts department, it would almost feel like it's tied together, right? And the opportunity here is like, you almost have the ability to be so flexible to know like, hey, this applies to everything. Where in those other places, it might be obscured with, well, don't you just hang with the arts people, right?
Yeah. So
that's a unique opportunity.
Absolutely. I went to there's an Association of Academic Museums and Galleries, and
that's a big gathering, right? That's a big gathering.
It was awesome. Like, that's huge. It was great though. And what the common themes were across is how to partner with other departments. Mm. Because if you have a strong art history faculty member, they want to curate shows, they want their students, and all of that is really valid, but it makes it harder to make space for non-art subjects to just use that space and also engage in kind of the work the museum does. So
Max can give me a little bit of gruff for this, but the year I landed at Vassar, they had just opened the Francis Lehman Loeb Arts Center on campus, which is the destination gallery for the Hudson Valley. You know, as you said, Vassar's been gifted a lot of great art over the years, and they still have an incredible art history department. And so, yet in my time there, I've only ever visited once or twice, and the other times that I'd been in the building, it was to rehearse plays in the rooms adjacent in the art history building. And it is a beautiful place with these incredible rotating exhibitions and an incredible standing collection. And yet it felt just so disconnected.
It didn't feel like ours. It felt separate.
Yeah, that's not ideal. But we're trying. And that's, I think, the hardest, you know, part of the COVID is this kind of shift in persona, right? We love to call ourselves the most accessible museum. We're open every day. We're always free. We can Marquette so centrally located, you can get there by bus, but we're also kind of bite-sized, is what I like to say. You know, we're small, so it's easy also to miss us. So that persona of the museum really being the students, part of what is exciting is it literally is. Students are going there every day for a class, which is awesome. That kind of shift in perspective of what that space can be is really exciting, I think, to see what happens after 2020.
So you were hinting at this with revealing sort of the pivot, and I think that's, we're all talking about play space, right? This notion of place. You started even your narratives about Mia, right? How it's a place, and Haggerty is a place, and museums are place-based in the sense that people have the visceral experience of walking through doors and moving through corridors and looking around high and low, and curators think really deeply about that physical experience. And now on this earth, that is not our current reality. And I'm really curious to hear what does your team think about? And you mentioned now there are classes convening there. Could you tell us more about what it means to hold a space like this now, before a vaccine is available and people can convene in mass numbers again? Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, Marquette is dictating the way all of our buildings are used. And so we really early on identified that we had a big gallery space that we could hold classes in. That is kind of coming at the trade-off of we're not open to the general public right now. So especially my role as, you know, community engagement manager, I supervise all of our K-12 programming. It's really caused a shift of just virtual, which in one way is almost easier, because if I know we can't have students come to visit the museum, at least for this fall, I am living in a mental kind of creative problem solving space of what can we do then? Mm-hmm. So we are about to, actually, we're going to make a podcast. I've been inspired.
What?
I know.
Yes. What?
We're not going to be creeping on your audience.
No, no, this is the big drop. We love breaking news.
Totally different audiences.
We love breaking news.
We're making a podcast for kids.
That's great. We
are working.
No, kids might listen to our show. You might be creeping on our audience.
You put so many kids to sleep at nap time.
It's so soothing. We're making a limited series, 5-episode podcast where we'll explore different artwork. Oh. And I just held auditions for Marquette theater students because they also are having this. They can't, you know, do the thing that they normally do.
That's the International Center for Acting, by the way. You did the people can't hear it, but she did the thing where like theater hands float up, like theater hands float up. That's Christine Fleming sign language.
Nice.
Acting.
Sorry. That is the one thing that doesn't translate podcast. My very active hands.
Yeah, jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
Great guest. You're a great guest. Go ahead.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm excited for that, just to work with the students. We're working with Plum Media. So that'll be really exciting and offering something extra. We have a K-12 program called Art Across the Curriculum, mm-hmm. which normally goes into classrooms. And so not only is our physical space looking different, but all of our schools, private, charter, public, every school district. We have partnered with many, many different teachers, and it looks different for all of them. So that kind of virtual remote learning space, thinking about what things do we already have that are available virtual, what can we do to just help teachers facilitate some additional resources and lessons. So we're doing a shift, filming some more behind the scenes program. So down, I'll be my first day actually back in the museum is this coming Friday. I'm really excited. I know. So going down to the art storage, filming the kind of things that you don't normally get to see, which is like where all the magic is in the collections, right? Every museum can only display so much art, but there's so much just below or to the side or hidden.
Is there gonna be like a Christine Fleming like persona, like I don't know, like Indiana Jones, like you're gonna have a hat and like a bullwhip going, oh, look at all these treasures. I know that's not, I get 2020, it's not like super cool, but like that was just the first analogy I had. Is there like a Christine Fleming persona, like not you, but rather you're gonna have this
the museum behind the scenes me? I mean, it would need to include polka dots. I'm actually wearing polka dots right
now. Great for the podcast. Again,
so polka dots are like every image I had from students drawing Miss Fleming as teacher included polka dots. I have a collection of them. Yeah, so it'll need to include polka dots, but I'll have to do some research to develop my persona. Because this feels now very important.
That's right. Well, we'll know it's important that like in the iteration of this five generations down, you have the Polka Dot Productions title card.
Yes.
You know you got somewhere.
Gotta copyright that.
We'll be here. Yeah, we're glad we were there at the beginning. So it sounds like there's these innovations, right, of like finding different media, opening up the space to people virtually so they can see it. And I think what's really interesting about that is, again, it is a place where I hear familiarity, right? This notion of the more we go to it, you get more familiar, the more it feels like home, it feels like you're welcome there. And I think that works both ways. Some museums I've been to, I don't really feel that. I almost feel like, oh, I don't know if I should be here. I know I paid $15 to get in. But it sounds like you're trying to do the opposite of that. And so when we imagine there's a time we can convene in mass numbers, what do you hope sticks like in terms of the practices or the mindsets that you're having to adapt to? What do you hope sticks when we are allowed to have people come through doors spontaneously?
Yeah, you know, every arts and culture conversation, capacity comes up, right? There's only so many of us. We're lucky. Our cut has been pretty lucky with furloughs. It's rough, right? Like, I think our capacity to serve audiences in any normal way moving forward, we're going to have to be creative. So I don't see our virtual programs and offerings ending. I see them as a continuation. And I think particularly to your point, I love museums. I have always loved museums. A lot of people don't know that they love museums yet. Mm-hmm. And the Hagerty, part of what I love about it, it is, I joke about it being bite-sized, but you can go and not be overwhelmed. Right. Mm-hmm. I love MAM. I became a member like week one. I love big art museums, but they can be really intimidating.
Right.
And I think those behind the scenes tours, even doing a virtual tour with teachers before they visit, there's a lot of anxiety for teachers bringing a group of students onto a campus. Yeah. Where are you going to park? What are the students going to see? Where are the bathrooms? And actually doing a virtual tour, mapping all of that out ahead of a visit, I think could help some of that anxiety. And students will then recognize things that they've seen. They kind of get a soft introduction before they have this big experience. So I can see things like that. We're also going to be testing out a community day with a bunch of partners on a virtual platform. So I actually have a convening conversation with museums from across the country tomorrow just to chat what platforms are working, what isn't working. And those kind of relationships where we're all just piloting and learning from each other what if our community day was a community day across the country? Mm. On Saturday, I went to an awesome event, virtual event, that was all about bees in Boulder, Colorado. Mm. I would have never even heard of that before 2020. So I think that's also exciting. Just our scope has broadened, right? Because you have so much access and so many people going through the same things or similar things.
So for me,
No, I was just going to, so I wanted to go back really quickly to build on what you, on your last comment, but also to the thing you just said previously about the, about what's in storage, right? Like what we see in museums is like a small percentage of what every museum owns. And to your point, like, you know, the Met or MAM or wherever is like super overwhelming. And even just thinking about what they own being a fact, factors larger than what you what can actually be seen, like what do you think this opportunity for sort of expanding scope to be able to like open up to let people see what you might be, have back there, right? Given space isn't really a challenge anymore, right? Like if you you know the Hagerty is sort of confined to whatever physical space, but now if we're thinking about like virtual space, how does that stuff get displayed? How does that stuff get shown?
Which I feel like is you're setting me up, right? Because the Google Arts and Culture Project and you know the what could have been what would have been with the DNC, we were one of the organizations that worked with Google. So we now
you have the camera.
Google. We have the camera.
You have the camera, yeah.
And just the nicest guy came. He was so kind and really, really interesting to see that camera in action. So now we have a lot of our collection on view on Google Arts and Culture on our page. So there's online tours, you can really zoom in. The only challenge I think, and one of the strengths of our collection is a lot of contemporary work. And all of the kind of copyright, the public domain, issues with artists that are living, artworks that cannot be shared in that way. Hmm. That's the kind of where the creative problem solving comes in, because you can even go online on our website and search throughout. There's there's a great kind of search field. You can type in different themes, artist names to find artwork. So we've been sharing like that. I think the Google Arts and Culture Project just made it even better because you can really just the high res pictures that you can get are really exciting. So that will be more of the same. We've been working also on translating a lot of our website. We recently launched a Spanish language website. So that Google Arts and Culture Project gives us opportunity as well to create, you know, a go-to spot for label translation. So if someone comes in and speaks Spanish, they can access all of that information in their, you know, the language of choice online. So that's very exciting, but it just feels like the start, right, as we navigate this. So I know we had to, with our Knoll Fellowship exhibition, completely move it to a virtual exhibition. Which has sparked conversations of, gosh, what else could we do just virtually? We have our physical exhibitions, and I've had conversations with lots of different organizations for curating art from students, you know, response artwork. What if we just had a spot where students could have their first exhibition? It's okay now kind of for it to be virtual. Right. It's not a negative, it's just a different way.
Yeah, right. It's taken away maybe the stigma that might be, and just like, well, yeah, we're experiencing it this way. You know, as you've talked, you've reminded me about, again, I grew up in Chicago. This is, David went to Vassar, I grew up in Chicago. These are the tropes, constantly hammer. Our longtime listeners have endured. But like, I'm with you that I love museums, like, and I've loved the opportunity, but I will share for me, you know, as we've talked, it reminds me when I have a mental model, a mindset of like what a museum is, the image that comes up is a Doric or Ionic or Corinthian column. I'm not sure, but it's like the top part of a column. And then like on top of it is a bright white light that shines on it. And inside it's gleaming and clean, right? And there's little things, there's little ropes around to make sure I don't get too close. And that's what I think of, right? I'm not saying that's everybody's, but I think of that because it's a notion of like, this is what's important and we've preserved it. And this is why I think it's important. You might have a different opinion, but you're not my role, right? And I'm just sort of wondering, what do you hope that if you're like, Mac, here's a mental model I'd like you to have, or here's an image, like what would that be? for you in the way you do your work? Like, what is a mental model? Or maybe you're like, no, Mac, that's the right one.
No, I love that.
But what do you think? What would be one that you hope that because you guys did the work that you did, I would start evolving it to be what? What do you think?
I love that. In part, we're launching just this year a new curriculum for K-12 that is called Focus on the Visual Arts. And each chapter investigates different preconceived conceptions we have about art. So first chapter, what is art? Who makes art? One of the chapters is literally called Where Does Art Belong? Because art doesn't, I mean, even in artwork in an art museum, some artists create work to be touched, to interact with, to take one of, or postcards, or to, you know, wind something or press a button. I, you know, the stanchions, those ropes. There's so many museum conversations I've been part of how high, where, what kind of stanchion. I mean, there's like a whole industry for stanchions.
But and big stanchion doesn't want us to have this conversation, Christine. Right now there's a stanchion on my forehead from big stanchion. I get it. But we're brave on this bike. We take on big stanchion. So go ahead.
Exactly. But that idea that art, I mean, even, and I relate it to some of the research that people do, right? We're so used to thinking of these like ancient Greek sculptures and they're white. They used to be painted. Even today, our perception of what is in an art museum, it's out of context. Mm-hmm. Art wasn't really made to be in, not all art was made to be in a museum. I mean, artists would create things for the salon and contemporary artists with the goal of having them in museums. But even people like Heath Herring, who, you know, the museum, the Hagerty, is probably best known for his huge construction fence, this like 24 panel fence. He came, he's a street artist. We have it on view in the museum, but that's not its natural habitat. It was the literal construction fence to keep people safe while the museum was being built. Hmm. So that is kind of an example now where you're taking things out of context and putting them in. So who's to say what that context should look like? Hmm. You know, the debate with curators and registrars and conservators that our goal is to preserve the art. Some artwork can't be preserved. Right. Hmm. Andy Goldsworthy is making art out in nature. There's a life cycle of that art. So I mean, there are rules and I have to play by the rules, but I think that, you know, we work a lot with kids on how to look at art, that museum fatigue of shuffling, spending 10 seconds in front of every artwork, reading every label. That's horrible. I recently at MAM had someone recommend a playlist on Spotify and just walked around. I mean, you can sit, you can lounge, you can, there's so many different ways to be with an artwork. So stanchions aren't required always, I think. Sometimes per the art, you know, the loan agreement, they are required. But if it's yours, sometimes you can play, which is exciting.
You know, I think about like all of the photos of artists throughout time creating, you know, photos of them sort of in their studio doing stuff, right? It is so opposite of the museum experience, right? It's dirty, it's like messy, it's chaotic, it's all nutty, right? And then you see, you know, the Kandinsky at the museum, and it's like everything's beautiful, right? Everything's clean. Don't touch it. Get away from it. it's an interesting flip of the act of creation and the act of preservation, which, you know, I guess in the Hegelian sense, right? Museums are sort of like the vessels for preserving, or for preserving death or preserving life, right? I can't remember which one it is, but that's a fascinating thing where, you know, you it feels like, and I don't know, you're the professional, right? it feels like museums ought to be places where you're celebrating the creative spirit and the sort of chaos of it. But I also understand why that can be difficult.
Well, and I think giving place, right, to artwork from different cultures and being honest with how you acquired. I mean, that's also the back part of that, right? There's some pretty dubious means. And I'll
that just, is a generous way of saying it. I know you work in the industry, so you have to say dubious means. I don't necessarily work in that industry, but I know there are other folks I know who might use other words.
You can be my translator, like a lot.
Everybody, just for the listeners at home, everybody's eyes sort of opened up really, really large.
Dubious, there are dubious means of acquisition. Yeah. Or they stole it. Go ahead.
Yeah, they straight up stole it.
Straight up stole it.
Right. And you know, there's the difference between artists in and art and craft and all of these things. In some cultures, you can't return the artifacts. I mean, think about, you know, which I did my master's in England. So the British Museum, man, is their collection awesome, but there's a reason that they have so many things for so yeah. many cultures, like the empire that they, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, but if you follow the kind of current events of them returning artwork to cultures or being asked to and not returning artwork, I mean, that's, yeah. it's worth investigating and thinking about just in the role of what museums are now and what they should be, what they could be. Hmm. That's, there's lots of great with all of the social justice work people are doing, you know, decolonizing the museum and thinking about what our role should be. What should we do with all of these things? How can we make things right or give context to, you know, the history that has transpired to bring us these things?
Well, that's going to be another podcast.
You should, yeah.
We're back. Or put that on your kids' podcast. Blow them away.
Start that, scaffold it up.
You should have Mac and I on your kids' podcast at episode 33 to talk about the provenance of art and
yes.
and countries of origin. And
it reminds me of a Second City review once where they did this running bit where they had Noam Chomsky teaching 5-year-olds about Thanksgiving, you know, and just kind of like mess with their heads. Like he was just very up, and that would be kind of like our deal about, we're going to talk to your 6-year-olds about. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. How that went wrong. And then you'll have to go back to teaching because you've lost your job. Speaking of your job, we have the ability to give people a new job for just a little bit. So don't unpack your Haggerty belongings, 401k.
Not yet.
There it is. Not yet. But in the meantime, we can make you the arts and culture czar for Milwaukee, but it only lasts for another few minutes. So you got to act fast.
Okay.
Christine Fleming, welcome, dear leader. What is your first and most urgent policy you would advance in this role as arts and culture czar for Milwaukee?
Yeah, your episode, and I forget the person's name who was talking about the funding structure, right? Funding and tax revenue mm-hmm. for arts and culture. As a person from Minneapolis.
Here we go.
You kind of, I knew that. I knew that Minneapolis does all right. It's home. So I'm a bit biased. Yeah. There are so many community-based, I mean, if you're really into bookmaking, there's a center for that. Printmaking, yeah. ceramic, photography, there's so much. And to be so surrounded by it, it wasn't until I moved away that yeah. I realized yeah. not everywhere feels like that.
Yeah.
And so it was insane to me to hear the numbers. So we need more funding in the arts. There should be more tax revenue to help to fund these projects, because I think, not that that's the most important, but it becomes more prevalent. I'm used to seeing bus stops and light rail installations. I'm used to seeing murals. I'm used to seeing arts injected in every area of my surroundings. Mm-hmm. And that comes from an investment in that. So fund the arts.
This segment brought to you by the Twin Cities Travel Department. The Twin Cities, come across the river.
Twin Cities. But I will say the one thing, so, and I've thought about this because I did my bachelor's degree in Duluth, and I have this
San Francisco of the North, by the way.
Yes, indeed. Beautiful city. And I've started saying this catchphrase, Minneapolis is great, but it does not have a Great Lake. Mm. And Milwaukee, which is, I know, so corny, but Milwaukee does. And I think that mix, right? There's so many arts and culture opportunities here. Yeah. And we have a Great Lake, and there are some phenomenal water organizations. So it feels like this pocket, right? So with funding, there's all of these opportunities, a little like the Haggerty has at an institution with no art department. Yeah. We also, with the lake and all of these disparate seeming organizations, could do so much, which is really exciting.
I was really hoping you were blaming the lake for our arts and culture woes, which I thought was going to be a rhetorical stretch, but I'm like, I'm here for it. I want to see you alienate.
That's a super hot take, especially for where we are
about the hot take culture. But in all seriousness, you joke about it, but with joking, there's truth in it. This notion of, you come from an area that has invested $7.37 per capita in arts and culture, it's going to be part of everything. right? You see the effects of that after just a generation. It's not been all that time. It took a while to get the, you know, I think the 80s and 90s, right? It sort of got to that point.
I think you said 20 years.
20 years. Yeah.
So again, just 20 years though. Yeah. And the effect of it, that investment over a generation, again, 13 cents per capita here in Wisconsin, which has been around 15 years, if you will, mm-hmm. that low, right? Even though your term is ended, we hope to keep the legacy going of making sure to figure how to integrate our state. When I say the state as a lowercase s, right? The notion of the public support mm-hmm. for arts and culture as arts almost as like air, like water. Like these are things we need to preserve. And
it is as important.
It's as important. So it was a great thing. And, you know, one of your legacies is, I don't know if you noticed, on the corner of 22nd and Vliet, there's a stanchion with your face on it.
Nice. On a switchbox. Pay homage to the stanchion gods.
Ironically, it's come full circle.
It has.
That's awesome. Man, Christine, it's so great to have you on the pod. Thanks for taking the time to visit with us. Before you go, plugs. Time for plugs. How can we find you? How can we find the Haggerty, especially with COVID times?
Absolutely. Start with our website or search for the Haggerty on the Google Arts and Culture page to explore some of our artwork. Keep an eye out. The Marquette University has convened a committee to work on a mural. So there is a bunch of students. The voting ends today, I believe. So there will be some new art on campus very, very soon, which is very exciting with a local artist. And just, you know, get in touch. Our emails are all posted on our website. So you can literally email any number of our staff members with questions or ways to get involved.
She's one of the good ones, David.
Yeah. I think we got onto some really interesting topics that weren't in our show prep, particularly about like museums and the nature of museums and what's not seen. I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate how, I think she, what I really appreciate about Christine, and maybe she's new to town, right? Or just her approach. It's just so fresh and just sort of open to the possibility and trying to find a way to be very inclusive and thinking through, you know, for me, it's always about belonging. Like that's a thread for me. Like I'm fascinated with our work around belonging and how people feel like they belong. And I feel like she's very much playing that role in the museum field of how to make sure that folks feel like they belong in museums, that the museum belongs to them. That it isn't the separate place, but rather it's the place that hopefully reflects their lives and captures maybe, or helps reflect lives of folks that have come before them and brings that message to where they are today.
Yeah, and you can really see that if you ever get a chance to chat with her, you can really see her eyes light up when she talks about, you know, museums and art education and. Just being able to engage people in the mission of art. I think that's why we had looked to her as being guest number one on our show, and rather she's become guest number 34. Unfortunately, but that is our fault, not hers.
You know who was number 34? Walter Payton, Sweetness. So I'm saying it's intentional because, you know, best running back ever for the Chicago Bears, arguably the NFL ever. Come at me at that one. And so to me, she's our number 34. She's our Sweetness. See what I did there?
Giannis, also number 34.
I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it the next week.
You're going to get murdered on there.
I'm going to get murdered. Somebody with a Cream City jersey is just going to take me out. I can't believe you used 34 to associate with Walter Payton. Yeah, even I know it.
Nice knowing you. Nice. You've lost all the weight. Now you can and you've also run a lot. So you'll have you'll have the endurance to be able to run far.
Is this like a Running Man hard target kind of situation now? We're going to do that's my new life, by the way. That's my new life. I'm just gonna be on the run. This sucks. Sorry, Milwaukee. I totally missed that one.
I'm not good at the closeouts. Last week, I didn't let Joel Brennan do the plugs. And this week, I neglected the two-time MVP. You know why? Honestly, I'm going to own it. Giannis is great, but he's not my guy. So whatever, you know, I'm a Bulls guy. So that's why it didn't happen.
You really want to get burned?
Like, leaning into it now. Well, I might as well lean into it. Why am I? I'm not going to issue some mealy-mouth apology. No. Let's go Bulls. Come at me. Metaphorically, not physically. I have children. All right. So you know who's really generous?
Our listeners.
Members, our listeners. They're generous. They're so generous. And so please give David 5 stars. You don't have to give me anything. I get it. Or, you know, share us. Let us people know that this podcast exists and is inspiring you, giving you some smiles, but also hopefully some thoughts around arts and culture. And let us know. We've actually got viewer mail last week. We're excited to respond to it. We'll respond to an upcoming episode. It's probably after the road series, but email us at pod@imaginemke.org. And you could also find us on Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_mke.
We're also on Facebook at Imagine MKE. Make sure you listen to our sister and brother podcast, Black Imagination, and Arts Forward MKE, the two other podcasts in the Imagine MKE podcast network. Join the conversation on social media, #ImaginaryFriendsMKE or new #Imagination.
Capitalize the N and Imagine Nation.
We don't know what's coming up next week. It might be a clip show. It might be something else, but the something else could be really, really cool. So be sure you stay tuned. Either way, make sure you also take action. Write your state elected officials, federal elected officials at www.imaginemke.org/act.
Is that right to go to our guest right now? Or
yeah.
Do you want
to? Yeah. Wait, we can do something.
Edit this out. Well, it said story time. I guess we've done enough. We've done enough.
I think we've done enough.
I think everyone's like, you know, they have everyone has their hands up. They have their palms up. Like, you've done enough, Mac. You've done enough.